All right, guys, welcome back to the next video. I'm Joe McCall. I'm with Larry Goins.
We had a great
introduction there talking about why this is such an exciting opportunity. And now we're going to dive deeper into the details of how all of this works. And I'm looking forward to it. Larry, you want to take it away?
Yeah, man, I'm really excited about this as you know, just to refresh a little bit, you know, on the last training, we talked about, you know, all the advantages of a small town versus the disadvantages of a big town. So I want to jump into this one and talk about, there's basically two types of real estate, okay? There's real estate as a business, and there's real estate as an investment, okay? The cool thing about small town USA is you can actually buy both kind of properties. There's some markets, if you're in a big MSA, you know, there may only be typically rentals, or there may only be typically, you know, really higher priced properties. For example, a lot of areas on the West Coast, you know this, Joe, a lot of areas on the West Coast, you're not gonna find rental type houses, you know, in California or a lot of parts of Nevada or even Colorado, some of those areas, right? Because they just don't cash flow, right, Joe?
Yeah, and a lot of people who live out there think that, oh, I can only do deals here and it's too expensive, it doesn't work. And they're afraid of doing it in a small town because it's unknown to them, and they think it's not going to work. But the exact opposite is true.
Exactly. And, you know, real estate as a business, that's buy, sell. It generates business income, not passive or portfolio income. If you're buying and selling, like if you're a wholesaler, or if you're doing fix and flips, you know, you are, or if you're even seller financing and selling the notes, or even if you're wholesaling lease options, right, Joe? That is a business. Okay. That is a business. Yeah. You are a dealer, right? You're a dealer. A lot of people say, oh, don't be a dealer. That's not true. If you're buying and selling, it is business income, and you are a dealer. Forget about it, right? It is what it is, right, Joe?
It's not a big deal. You're making money, right?
Exactly. But that's why you need some investment real estate, right? Real estate as an investment generates passive income called portfolio income or interest income. Also, depending on what kind of properties you invest in, whether you invested, say, notes or residential properties or commercial or self-storage or whatever, you can also get depreciation, which helps offset your business income that you generate as a dealer. Right, Joe?
Yes. I was going to say, you can't go broke making money. Right?
Is that a Joe-ism? You know, I love it.
I wish I could have said I made it up, but that sounds like something you would say, Larry.
You can't go broke making money. That's good. I love it. Now, so let's talk about the type of properties we're going to be buying in small town USA. Okay. We're going to be buying fix and flip properties. Okay. Fix and flip properties. If you want to fix and flip it, you can do that. This is not a course about wholesaling or fix and flips or landlording or lease options or anything. This is about a market, a niche, a segment. You can do whatever you want to with the property. I don't care, right? So you can do fix and flips. If you want to buy a property, fix it up and sell it, there's fix and flips in small town USA, right? If you want to do rentals, there's plenty of rental properties. A lot of the properties we buy, Joe, they're already rented. They have tenants in them, right?
Yep.
They have tenants. They're cash flowing properties. Right. I mentioned on one of the last videos that I had a guy try to give me a house that had a tenant in it that was paying. Right. So so there's rentals, there's fix and flip. There's also wholetail deals. Wholetail deals. What is a wholetail deal? A wholetail deal is a deal that's not quite cheap enough for either a landlord or a fix and flip investor, but you can sell it for a little bit more. And you can sell it really quick to somebody that's going to live in it, right? We do quite a few of those. We bought a house a little while back where I had this house under contract for $75,000. It had 2 acres of land. It had a barn It had a paddock that's like a small pasture, and it was a brick ranch house out in the middle of nowhere, right? I mean, out in the middle of nowhere, but 2 acres of land. I had it under contract for $75,000. Well, this lady kept giving me a hard time. She kept lying to me about this and that and the other, and putting us off, and she wasn't moving out. And we even gave her $2,000 moving money, right? But she just kept, you know, so I finally just went back to her and I said, look, and this was true. I mean, the house did need more work than what she said. I said, look, you know, I didn't think I was going to have to do this, but unfortunately, I can't give you 75. I really need to be around 35 or 40. But I tell you what, if you want to go ahead and do the deal, I'll buy it from you for 50,000 cash. Right. And she was selling the house because she had a judgment against her. She had a judgment. She had tax liens, and she had a small mortgage she had to pay off. And she inherited the house. It wasn't even her stuff. She inherited the house. So even at $50,000, she was putting about $16,000 in her pocket, right? So, so she said, okay, I'll take the $50,000. Well, we sold that property wholesale to an older couple that they've got kids and grandkids, and they wanted a place for a horse for their kids and grandkids to come to their house to be able to ride the horse, right? So, so we wholetailed that deal. We marketed it for $89,900. We even put it on the MLS. And that's one of the things in our paperwork. It allows us to put our properties on the MLS so you can wholetail them. And we ended up selling that property. We bought it for $50,000 and we sold it for $85,000, right?
Wow.
And it was a cash buyer, And literally, we got it under contract on one day and we literally closed the following week. We're closing on one right now that we wholetail. Right now, literally today as we are recording this, we're closing on a deal. No, it's tomorrow. We're closing. But just last Friday, I got it under contract, right? And this week on Thursday, today's Wednesday, Thursday, we're closing a cash wholetail buyer. We bought it for $35,000, I believe, and we wholetailed it for $49,900.
So are you going to talk later about like when you decide, Larry, to wholetail it and put it on the MLS, or when you decide to just sell it to, you know, with some bandit signs or something?
That's a really, really good question. Absolutely. We can talk about that. What I want to try to do is I want to try to maximize our profit potential. If it's a wholetail type deal, I'm not going to just wholesale it, make $5,000 or $10,000. Now, don't get me wrong. Sometimes I make only $5,000. I don't want you guys to think every one of my deals are $20,000, $30,000. That's not true, right? Last week, we closed on one we made $7,000 on. You know, but who's going to sneeze at $7,000, right?
Sure, yeah.
So, in addition to fix and flips, rentals, and wholetail, this is the part I love. You have a lot of mobile homes. You have mobile homes. You have single wides and double wides. I love, love, love the double-wide mobile homes. You know this, Joe.
Wow, I didn't know this. So tell me why.
I thought you knew this. You can go into small-town USA. Check this out. You can go into small-town USA. You can buy a 1999, 2000, 2001, 2 or 3 double-wide mobile home, 3 or 4 bedroom, 2 or 3 bath, 1,400 to 1,800 square feet. They've got vaulted ceilings. They have plant shelves. They have garden tubs. They have skylights, and they're on about an acre of land. And you can pick them up for $20,000, $25,000, $30,000, right? And they're livable. Now, yeah, they may need paint and carpet, maybe some countertop work or something like that. But you can pick them up for $20,000, $25,000, $30,000, right? I got a student right now. He just yesterday, he got under contract a double-wide mobile home for $38,000, and all the other houses around it, are selling for $89,000, $99,000, $129,000, and they're all double-wide mobile homes.
So, and you're selling these with cash. You're not doing owner financing or rent-to-own on them, right?
Well, we're going to talk about some exit strategies in one of these trainings. We're going to talk about some exit strategies, but But right now, me personally, unless I'm doing it in a retirement account or an ESA or HSA, I'm wholesaling everything. I believe right now is the time to stash cash for the crash, right? So okay. We are stashing cash right now, and then eventually I can do that. But if it's in a retirement account, like I've got a Roth IRA, I've got a Roth 401k, I've got ESA and HSA, health savings account and education savings account. So if we can do that, if we do it in one of those, then I'll sell or finance it. But that's a whole nother story. If we sell or finance it, if it's a lot, I do all my lots rent to own, okay? I'll buy them for $500 and I'll sell them for $99.99. That's 20 times, right? 20 times what I paid for it. Now, don't get me wrong. I paid twice for closing costs what I paid for the lot. If closing cost is $1,000, that's twice. So I got $1,500 in it. So I'm selling it for 10 grand, right? With owner financing. Yeah. And I'll typically get a couple $1,000s down and I'll have them pay me $300 a month for about 4 or 5 years, right?
Nice.
So yeah, those are really cool deals, really sweet deals.
And because it's land, Larry, is this right? Because it's land, you don't have to do all of the Dodd-Frank laws because it's not residential.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Not only that, now, you need to see your CPA about this, okay? I'm no CPA, I'm no attorney, but there is an IRC, Internal Revenue Code, that's called IRC. There's an Internal Revenue Code that based on how I see it and how people I've talked to view it, says that you can always take the installment sale and you're not considered a dealer if you're seller financing land, right? Because if you're seller financing enough houses, you're going to be called a dealer, right? Then you can't take what's called the installment sale for the internal revenue, right? Which basically means defer your taxes, right? You only pay taxes as you receive the money. With land, there's an internal revenue code that says that if you don't improve the land, then you can take the installment sale and you're not considered a dealer, okay? So, which that brought me to the next section was lots, right? Lots are another thing. I mean, you're going to get a lot of people that have a lot and they think, oh my gosh, the land is worth $10,000, right? Or sometimes in small towns, you're going to have somebody that has a house on the lot and they say the house just needs to be torn down. The house is well past repair and it just needs to be torn down. So, and I'll take $5,000 for the lot. You know, well, here's the problem. Whenever I open their eyes to the fact that, well, okay, so who's going to tear down that house? Well, you'll have to do that. Well, it might cost us $5,000 or $6,000 to have that house torn down and hauled away. So before I can even get a buildable lot, it's going to cost me twice of what you're asking. I can't give you but a couple $100 for that lot, because I'm going to have another $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 maybe in it to tear it down, right?
Yep.
And in reality, what we're going to do is we're going to sell it as is and let our buyer deal with it, okay? Let our buyer deal with it. And
super smart.
Exactly. And the last thing is land. You can find a lot of acres of land in small town USA. You know, we had a deal a while back where we bought, I think it was 8 acres, or maybe it was 10 acres for 8,000, or 8 acres for 10,000 or something. I can't remember, but it was really, really cheap land. And you can either wholesale it, you can build something on it, you can sell or finance it, you can do whatever you want to. Sometimes you get people that have 50 acres, 100 acres or more, right? And so there's just a tremendous amount of different types of property in small town USA. And you never know what you're going to run into. You know, we've had people who have commercial property. We're buying a house right now that it's in small town USA, but it's on a main drag and a main thoroughfare, a main road. And there's a brick house, but right beside it is a separate building that the lady used for a salon. She does hair. She used for a salon. So it's got the house and the extra building, right? And we're buying it right now for, I believe it's $35,000, and we're selling it for $59.99, right? Nice. So, yeah.
So Larry, if you don't mind me asking, on your when you're marketing, are you intentionally targeting absentee owners, and it doesn't matter if they own mobile homes or land or commercial, or are you? What are you doing there?
Well, we buy absentee owner list, tax delinquent list, rental properties that have been owned for 20 plus years, right? And then we also have other, there's other criteria as well, like maybe they have arrest records or something like that. There's just a lot of different things that go into putting together a list. And we'll talk about direct mail. We're going to have a section on direct mail, and we'll talk about that. I know, Joe, you do a lot of that. You do a lot of it for students as well. So we'll talk about that as well. But yeah, there's a lot. There's just so many different kind of lists. Now there's even this thing called list stacking, where you buy a list. You buy a list, and then you stack that list. In other words, you do some research on it and find out, okay, so if they're an absentee owner and they're in their 80s and they've owned it 20 plus years and they have an arrest record, I mean, they're on a lot of different lists. Chances of them wanting to sell that property are very high, right?
One of the things that we're doing right now with land, just to tease what we're going to talk about later, is we're making blind offers on vacant land. We're making blind offers at 15 to 20 cents on the dollar, and it's working really well, getting one out of every 400 offers, conservatively, one out of every 400 offers accepted.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you just send them a letter.
Just send them a letter with an offer attached to it. So we see what the average price per acre that lots are selling for, and we just make blind offers at 15 to 20 cents on the dollar. And it's just a numbers game, but it's working really well.
You know what's funny, Joe, is I got one of those letters. It wasn't from you, because I know you're a better marketer than this, but I got a letter in the mail, and it was an offer on a lot that I have, right? And this guy didn't have his company name. He had his own personal name. He didn't have a phone number. He didn't have an email address. He didn't even have an address for my lot. All he had was a tax ID number, right? So I could not have contacted him. I couldn't have contacted him at all, right? I don't even understand. Why did he even send it to me, right? I kept it just to show as a warning what not to do, right?
Can you send that to me later? I'd like to see that.
Oh, yeah, I'll be glad to. I couldn't believe it. And it was somebody that lives in, like, New York or somewhere, right? But they're trying to buy a property and somewhere in the Carolinas. It didn't even have an address on it, right?
Yeah.
But the point we're trying to make is you can do this on any kind of property, right? Fix and flips, properties that need to be torn down, mobile homes, modular homes, commercial properties, vacant lots and land. And so you just you send out the marketing, you're going to find a lot of these sellers say, hey, you know what? I want to sell this, and I want to sell this, or I know somebody else that wants to sell this. So you just, that's cool. And the other cool thing about this, Larry, I'm assuming people are wondering, well, they're maybe nervous, like, what if I get this under contract and I find out that my price is too high or it needs way more work than I thought it would be? Can I get out of the contract if it's not really a good deal?
Wait till you see my one-page contract, right?
All right.
Imagine being on the phone with somebody, they don't know you, you don't know them, and you're on the phone with them, and they say, oh, okay, I think I could take that, you know, I think we'll do that. And then you say, great, I have a simple, standard, one-page real estate offer to purchase. Here's what it says, basically. I'm buying your house as is where it is, I'm paying you cash, and I'm paying all the closing costs. And it's only one page.
Yeah.
Is that great or what?
It's great. And so it allows you a contingency to get out or renegotiate if you have to. Right.
Guess what, Joe? I don't even have a contingency in my contract. No contingency.
You don't?
No.
Well, you got it.
I don't have anything. There's no inspection period. There's no due diligence period. None of that. And guess what? Every one of my contracts says I have I will close sometime in the next 60 days. And if I don't, if for any reason, I've got an automatic 30-day extension. I got 90 days to close if I want to.
All right, nice. I'm looking forward to that module. That's good. Good.
I know, right? It's awesome. It's awesome. So let's talk about the type of small town buyers. How about that?
Yeah.
Excuse me. So this is one of the best things about being in small towns is you've got rehabbers. Now, you're not going to have as many rehabbers as you have in the MSA. But guess what? People in the MSA who are doing fix and flips, they know that deals are getting tight, okay? They know deals are hard to find. I take my buyer's list from the Charlotte MSA, right? From the Charlotte MSA, and I have taught them to go outside the MSA in the small towns to get their fix and flips, right?
Yeah.
And guess who they get them from? They get them from me, right? So not only do you have rehabbers that are local, right? You have fix and flip rehabbers that are in the MSA and they go outside the MSA. The second type of small town buyer you have are landlords, okay? There's, believe it or not, there's a lot of people in small towns that rent out properties. Now, the other cool thing is a lot of them may only have 1, 2, 5, or 10. It's unusual that you're going to find one or two landlords that own 50 or 100 properties. Most of them will have somewhere between 1, 2, or 3 and maybe 15 or 20. That's about it, right? Occasionally, you will run into somebody that has a lot of them. But for the most part, you know, for the most part, they're going to only own a few of them, okay? And that's the other cool thing about the small towns, too, is sometimes I buy a 6-pack of houses, I'll buy a 10-pack of houses, I'll buy a 3-pack of houses. That's what I call it, right? So, I mean, we bought in Lancaster, South Carolina, not so long ago, a couple of months ago, I bought 6 houses for $30,000.
Wow.
For all 6 of them. And guess what? Wow. They were all rented out for $350 a piece. I bought them for 30. They're rented out for $300, $350 a piece. And I sold them all for $60,000. Bought them for 30, sold them for 60, right? Made 30 grand, doubled up on it, right? And sold them.
Now, these landlords that are buying them, are most of them local landlords? They already own rental properties in that local area?
A lot of them are. A lot of them are. Absolutely. Yeah. So you've got rehabbers, your fix and flippers, you've got your landlords, you also have cash owner-occupied buyers. Cash owner-occupied buyers. We sold a house, it's been about 3 weeks ago now. We were selling this house for $39,900. And this was a huge house. I was only paying $20,000 for it. We sold this house for $39,900. And a guy who owned a construction business, a painting business, he wanted this house. And guess where this lead came from? Facebook. The lead came from Facebook, right? So he went by and looked at it. This was a 5-bedroom house, brick house, 2-story. It was a rental property, but the tenant moved out, trashed the house, you know, just cosmetic stuff. And this guy said, I've got a big family. I need this house. I have cash. So the guy comes by here. He drives 1.5 hours to my office. The house was about 1.5 hours away. He drives here to my office to sign the contract. And he said, do you want the cash now? Do you want the cash now? I said, do you mean as in $100 bills? He said, yes. I said, whoa, no. No, we can't do that. I said, we're going to have an attorney to do the closing that ensures that I give you clear title to the property and you really own it and you give me good money, right? That your check doesn't bounce, right? He said, well, I don't have a check. I got cash. I said, well, what you may have to do is put that money in the bank. You know, I don't know. That's between you and the IRS. I don't know, but it's up to you. But you're going to have to wire the money to the attorney's escrow account, and they'll handle the closing. And that's what he did. That's what he did.
We were selling a property one time, me and a student, And the student puts some signs out. The buyer calls him up and said, I'm interested in this property. And I think we were selling it for $20,000. We bought it for $10,000, selling it for $20,000, something around there. And he said, well, I want to buy it. And I said, okay, well, we need some proof of funds. And he said, what is that? I was looking at the text exchange, right? He said, what's a proof of funds? And I said, well, it's some kind of like proof that you have the money. So then he sent a picture of his coffee table with the whole coffee table full of cash, $20,000. And he said, is this a proof of funds? We said, yes, it is. And with that deal, we actually did take the cash, but we took the cash to the title company. And I don't remember all the details.
That's hilarious, man. I love that. I love that. We sold a house one time. This was outside of Conway, South Carolina, in a small town just before you get to Myrtle Beach. And we had this double wide under contract, or we actually, we bought it, and we bought it, we owned it, and then we were selling it. We were going to sell or finance it. But in the meantime, I think we paid $25,000 for it, best I remember. And we were going to sell it for like $69,900 with owner financing. So, but something happened and the house burned down, right? So we ended up collecting on insurance $50,000 cash, right?
Wow.
And then we ran an ad and sold the burnt down house and the lot for $10,000. And the guy literally brought $10,000 to our office, right? And we did the same thing. We just sent it. We just took it to the attorney's office and handled it that way. But it was funny. Yeah. That was funny. It's amazing the people that you run into that have cash in these small towns. That's why I'm telling you, one of your major buyers are cash owner-occupied buyers. Now, here's the other thing. Another great buyer for your properties are parents and grandparents and other relatives of somebody that's going to live in. For example, let's say mom and dad live right down the street where you've got a house. You've got a house and they got a son and a daughter-in-law and two grandkids that they want them to be close to them, right? The parents will come off the hip with the cash just like that. Right.
Or they want to get them out of the house.
Or they want to get them out of their house. They want them close, but not that close, right?
Right. I've heard of that happening a lot. Yeah.
It does happen a lot. It happens a lot, right? And even with the lots and the land, you got some people that they just want to own something. They're tired of throwing their rent money away. They don't care if it's a fix and flip, if it's a burnout. They don't care if it's a vacant lot, if it's a couple acres of land. They just want to own something. They're like homesteaders, right? They just want to own something. And you can rent to own to those people, sell or finance, do lease options to those people, or you can just offer them for cash, right? That's what we do on those little cheap ones. This is a really good tip right here. Own lots. I always put vacant lots in one of my retirement accounts, either my Roth IRA, Roth 401k, or ESA or HSA. And then what I do is, if I'm paying $500, I'm probably going to have $1,500 in it, right? So I'm going to sell it and get a couple $1,000s down. So I made $500, and then I'm going to collect $300 a month for the next 4 or 5 years.
Right? Tax-free.
Tax-free. Exactly. Exactly. And it's a great way to build up your education savings account, your HSA health savings account. I mean, that's a whole nother topic. We could spend 6 weeks on ESAs and HSAs alone, right? Yes. They're great. They're really, really good tools, right? So those are the different types of small town buyers that you have and the different types of small town properties that you have. So it's there's just so many more buyers out there and so many more types of properties than being in a major city. You're not going to have land. You're not going to have mobile homes. You're not even going to have very many infill lots, right? Infill lots meaning a neighborhood where a house, you know, never got built, right? Maybe the neighborhood's 20 years old, but somebody just never built a house on that lot, right? Yeah. So, but you see a lot of that in small town USA. Okay.
Good.
Now.
Good.
Now let's talk about picking a market. How about that, Joe?
That sounds good.
Good. Now, before we get started in picking a market, I want to share, there's two different ways you can look at this, okay? You can look at going deep or going wide, okay? You can look at going deep or going wide. Now, if you go deep and you stay in one central area, right? You stay in one central area, that means you're going to have to use multiple marketing methods to generate seller leads, okay? So if your MSA is here and you want to work out here a little bit, right? If you just want to work right over here outside the MSA, you're going to have to probably do direct mail, pay-per-click, bandit signs, bird dogs, Craigslist ads, virtual assistants, and a few other things, right? But if MSA is here and you're working all of this, right? All of this, like for me, I work 7 different counties, 1 county out from the MSA in Charlotte, okay? I work 7 different counties, all right? It may even be more than that. I work York County, Lancaster County. I was working Gaston, but it was too close. Gaston County is right outside of Charlotte, and I had too many people say, yeah, I got 2 other investors coming out, or I got 1 other person coming out. Forget that. I don't want the competition, right? So I went out. So I work Cleveland County, Lincoln County, Rutherford County, Catawba County. I work York County, Lancaster County, and Cherokee County. I believe that's 7, right? So those are the major counties that I work, right? Now, so that's the difference between going deep and going wide, okay? Wide is expanding your market so you can use fewer sources for deals. Okay, Joe, as you know, we mail out about 37,500 postcards a month. We break that up into 4 different weeks, right? You know, and we mail them out every single month, right? Every single month, right? And sometimes we get people that want to get taken off our list, right? So we do a little bit of both. We go deep into a market, right? And we go wide. We're doing direct mail is our primary source of leads right now. But with the direct mail, we get so many calls. We probably get 200 to 300 calls a week, right? We can't keep up with them all.
Now, compare that to the return. I'm not sure what percent return rate that is, but you compare that to any normal size big market, that is insane. That is really, really high response rates. That's phenomenal.
And don't get me wrong, we're not mailing out the final notice postcard where we get people calling up wanting to know what's going on. We tried that in small town. There is a postcard out there. It's a final notice postcard, and it'll get you a huge response rate, but it'll also get you a lot of upset and or confused people as well, right? We've mailed that final notice postcard, and we'll get people that call up and say, I paid my power bill. I paid my taxes, you know?
Well, you're going to share with us the direct mail you actually use later when we get into that section, right?
Yes. And I actually try to separate it out, and I'll mail 1 postcard 1 month, another postcard a different month, another postcard the 3rd month, another postcard the 4th month.
And postcards are like, when you're doing enough, they're not that expensive, right? 40, 45 cents a postcard.
Well, I've got mine down to about 30.2 cents per postcard, but I'm mailing almost 40,000 too, right? But I'll be able to share with all the viewers where you can go to get your list and where you can go to get your postcards. And they already have my stuff set up, right?
Nice. I love it.
Yeah. They already have my stuff set up. So you don't have to say, well, I want this list. I want this list. No, don't send me this. They already know what I want. So we're going to make it easy on you. How about that, Joe?
Oh, I like it. I love it. Good. So we're talking about markets. We're talking about going deep. We're talking about going wide. And so you kind of do both, right?
We do. We do kind of go both. We go wide, but we actually mail a lot. We don't use a lot of different methods. We do some pay-per-click. We do bandit signs. We do Facebook. And we also do what is it? We don't do Craigslist ads, right? We just don't do that. I mean, I know it's free, but we don't do that. But we do direct mail, bandit signs, Facebook ads, a little bit of PPC.
Are you doing any cold calling?
You know what? I've got a list that we do that we could cold call. My 40,000 list of 37.5. I've got numbers to about 60% of them. But quite frankly, we don't have to have the time to get to the ones we have now. So we don't cold call them yet. Although I am in the process of recruiting more people right now. And as soon as I do that and can get caught up with these leads, I'll put somebody on cold calling full time.
Yeah, but we'll talk about this in the marketing section. But, you know, it's someone who's just getting started. You just got to keep it simple. Just do some simple postcards to the simple list that Larry's going to give us. And worry about all the extra marketing stuff later.
Right. So let's talk about picking a market, okay?
Yeah.
Let's talk about picking. We're going to spend a few minutes and talk about this. Now, there's a couple of things about picking a market. Do you really need to pick a market? Because there's a lot of people, you live in an MSA where you can go outside of your MSA, a couple of counties out, and it's conducive for being able to buy and sell and do the small town model, okay? So should you stay or should you go, basically, right? So yeah. If you live in an area that is conducive to wholesaling or fix and flips or whatever with little resistance, then you should stay in your own market, okay? You're going to have an advantage of knowing the areas. You're going to have an advantage of knowing the streets, the neighborhoods, and you'll also have a lot of connections right there where you live, right? You'll also be able to meet with buyers and sellers if you need to, not that you always do, but if you need to, versus having to do everything over the phone or finding somebody locally to be your boots on the ground person, right? So, for example, if you live in the Bay Area of California, I don't know that you can go out far enough to be in small town USA and be in a market that's conducive for this whole model we're talking about. But having said that, let me share with you, some of our most successful students live on the West Coast. They just may be buying in the Midwest or the Southeast, you know, or whatever, right? Or even Northeast, not probably not Connecticut. They're probably not going to be living in California and buying Connecticut, but they could live in California and buy in upstate New York or Pennsylvania or Ohio, small town USA, right?
I was living in Prague in the Czech Republic, buying houses in the U.S.
I love it.
It's not that hard.
If your market has a high cost of acquisition, then you should probably consider another market. You know, if the prices are, if the median price home is $250 to $350 or more, you know, then you should probably pick another market. If you're in a market that's what I call a growth market, I'll give you an example. A growth market is like Phoenix, Arizona, Phoenix, Scottsdale. Now, there's a lot of successful investors there. Joe, we know some of them. We're in masterminds with them that are doing deals in Phoenix, Arizona. But it's a really, really hot market. It's competition. So if you're in a really hot market, you're in a very competitive market, what do you think some of these other guys that are professionals have, professional acquisition people, professional salespeople, and got a $10,000 a month budget? What do you think they're doing? They're going out a little bit too, right?
Yeah.
Just like I said earlier, I stopped mailing in Gaston County, North Carolina, because it was right next to Charlotte, right? It was right next to Charlotte. And I was getting a lot of people that said, oh, yeah, I've got several other investors coming out. Forget about it. I want to go one more county out, right?
Yeah.
I want to go enough counties out. I want to go small town enough to where when they get my postcard, that's the street view postcard, and I'll show this to you when we start talking about direct mail, but a street view postcard is, it pulls the street view from Google Earth or Google Maps and puts it on the postcard for you. So I'm literally sending them a picture of their own house, right?
Yeah.
I want to get the call that says, hey, why are you coming by taking my house? Take a picture of my house. Don't come by here anymore, right? That's the kind of person I'm looking for, right?
Yeah.
That
yeah,
doesn't understand, funny. Right? Yeah. That's true. So another thing to consider is if you have to go outside of your own area where you live, another thing to consider is the market you're looking at a non-disclosure state or disclosure state? Where are you going to have a hard time getting comps on properties, which means you'll need MLS access if you're in one of these markets. I'll give you an example. Texas. Texas is a non-disclosure state, right, Joe?
Yeah. Yeah. So is Kansas, right?
Yeah. I think Kansas is. I'm not exactly positive about that, but I know Texas is, right? So do you have the resources in whatever market it is, you know, to be able to help you? For example, do you know other investors that are buying or agents that can assist you, that can help you, or other business contacts such as boots on the ground? So to give you an example, what I tell people is if you've got to go out of your own hometown, home state to buy properties, the first thing I look for is where do my relatives live? Relatives that I actually want to talk to and know, right? That yeah. I want to have something to do with. Where do yeah. they live? If I'm living in the Bay Area of California, but I have relatives in Cincinnati, Ohio, that's great. That's great. Cincinnati, outside a couple of counties out, is a great market, a great area. You've got cheap houses, right? Farm communities. Yeah. It's awesome. So another thing to consider, and this is very important, is time zone. A lot of people don't really think about this, but if you are in California and you're marketing on East Coast time, somebody might call you at, it might be 7 o'clock in the morning East Coast time, but that's 4 o'clock in the morning West Coast time. So you may need to make some adjustments in how you handle those incoming calls. Like you may want to have a live answering service that answers 24 hours a day, because you're not going to take a call at 4 o'clock in the morning. I would hope not anyway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's something that not a lot of people think about. Not a lot of people really think about that, but it's something to consider. It's not a deal killer, but you do need to think about that. I mean, somebody on the East Coast could call up at 9 or 10 o'clock at night, and that's still only 6 or 7 p.m. on the West Coast, which is okay. Yep. But on the other end, in the morning, it'll be 4 o'clock in the morning, right? So another thing to consider when you're thinking about a market is, you know, is it a cash flow type market or a fix and flip type market? Because if it's just fix and flip, you've got no landlords to market to. There's not a lot of rental properties. Also, you want to look for markets that are older. As an example, you know, what do you think has more old aged inventory? Pittsburgh or Las Vegas, right? Las Vegas hadn't been around since the 30s, building a lot of houses since the 30s, right? So a lot of my houses I buy, they might be 1920, 1930, 1940 or 50 or 60, something like that. So those are all things to consider, right? When you're looking at an MSA, right? Now, let's talk about how to pick a market, okay?
Yeah.
Let's talk about how to pick a market. There's a few websites that you can look at, and that'll give you some ideas. And as I mentioned, the only purpose to pick a market is to make it easier on yourself, right? Make it easier on yourself. If you're in the Bay Area, you're not going to go out a couple counties and it's not going to be easy. Okay, I can tell you that right now. So, but the most important thing about picking a market is please don't get caught up in paralysis of analysis. Yeah. You know, listen to what I've told you and what I'm about to tell you and pick a market and run with it. Okay, pick a market and run with it. Don't get caught up in paralysis of analysis. Now, you want to look at home sales and prices. You can look at home sales and prices at city-data.com. City-data.com, right? This is going to give you an idea of what prices homes are selling for. All right. It also helps you to find an MSA, Metropolitan Statistical Area, with at least a million plus population. Now, this is not imperative. I've seen many people that have been very successful in MSAs that have 300,000 or 500,000 in the MSA, right? But if you've got an MSA that has a million plus population, there's going to be a lot of people spread out and a lot of small towns around. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really good. Another site that I like to use is datausa.io. Datausa.io. Yeah, that's good.
That's really good. Another thing you can do is just ask Google. Google knows everything. Just Google population by the MSA, right?
Yeah.
That's all you got to do is go to Google and type in, you know, MSAs by population, right? Or Metropolitan Statistical Area by population, right? And you're looking also for areas that have moderate to flat appreciation, okay? Moderate to flat appreciation. For example, let me show you right quick. If you're in the Phoenix market, if that market is hot, it's going to go like this and like this, right? The market is hot. It's on its way up. When the market crashes, it goes like this. I'm looking, even if you're a good negotiator, you could spend money on marketing and you're buying below the market, right? There comes a time when you bought it right here, but now the market is here, afterwards, you're going to lose money. You have to sell it below what you paid for it. See, with the small towns, you have the markets go up, the markets go down. You're not going to get caught. Even if you buy it here and the market changes, it's still above what you paid for it, right?
Yeah.
You don't see the real rapid rise and falls.
No, not at all. Not at all. So you're looking for moderate to flat appreciation, okay? Not high appreciation like most areas of California, Orange County, California, Bay Area, you know, Phoenix, you know, Arizona, Nevada, a lot of those places, right? And remember, it's a lot easier to sell cheap houses than it is expensive houses. It's a lot easier. Also, when you have cheap houses, there's a lot more landlords, right? Because if I'm selling a $50,000 house, I could sell that house to a landlord. I could sell it to a rent-to-own buyer. I could sell that house to an owner-occupied buyer. I could sell that house to a fix-and-flip investor.
If
the house is a $500,000 house, it's either going to be a fix-and-flip investor or an owner-occupant. And they got to get a loan, which means they got to get a loan. They got to get approved. They got to get an appraisal. They're going to do an inspection. Oh, my gosh. Right?
Yeah.
It's way too much. I would much rather sell a $50,000 house than a $500,000 house, right?
Yeah, there's just more buyers.
Exactly. Now, another thing you want to look for is older cities. As I mentioned this before, older cities means there's more aged inventory, okay? You're not going to find a house built in 1925 in Phoenix, Arizona, right? You're not going to find any or many of those, right?
Yeah. Older homes mean there's more deferred maintenance, which means you can get it at a bigger discount.
Yeah. That's right. More deferred maintenance, and there's more rental properties, right? A lot more rental properties as well, right? And you get more discounts on the deal too, right?
It's important for people to understand, like, don't think that you're looking for houses that you would want to live in. You're looking for investment properties that are going to be easy to sell. That's when you're picking a market, you got to think about who's my end buyer, who am I going to sell these houses to? And you may think there's not a big demand in these small towns, but you'd be surprised. There actually is. There's good, healthy demand and a very low inventory, even in these small towns. And when a property comes on the market that's at a significant discount, it's going to be snapped up quickly. So it's not as hard or scary as you might think.
That's true. That's true. And the other cool thing is, we'll get into this when we talk about marketing on another module, but when you're in the small towns and you're in a down market, when you're down here or down here, when you're in a down market, there's a lot more inventory on the MLS. You can save your marketing money. But guess what? There's not a lot of buyers in those small towns that are wanting to buy those properties. So I've literally bought houses off of HUD and the MLS for 20% of list price. 20% of list price. I couldn't believe it. We bought a HUD house one time. I can't remember. It was listed for 76, I believe. I think I paid 35, and it was only on the market for 17 days. 17 days. I couldn't believe it. I told the people in my office, I said, somebody made a mistake and clicked the wrong button somewhere. Whatever you do, make sure you get that paperwork in, right?
Right. And even in the down market, you can still wholesale those deals, right?
Oh, absolutely. And here's the cool thing. I'm buying now in a down market, I'm buying houses off the MLS and I'm wholesaling them for less than the list price. So I have it sold before we ever close on it, and it's listed on the MLS, and I'm selling it for less than the list price. In fact, our marketing, and you got to be really careful when you're marketing an MLS house. We'll talk about that in that module. But I market and I advertise, we have houses at prices that aren't available to the public. It's listed for this, our price is this, right?
Yeah. The whole point we're trying to make is when you're in a small market, it's a little more recession-proof. And as long as you're buying it smart, you'll always be able to sell it, whether the market's going up or going down. And I would argue it's actually going to be easier to make the money in the small towns in a down market and even an up market.
Oh, there's no question. Because people in a small town aren't as affected by the economy as they are in the big city, the big MSA, because you got major employers that hire, you know, a lot of people. You don't have that in the small towns. A lot of people in small town, they'll drive to work or they do landscaping or whatever. They're, like I said, blue collar, right? They're gonna work. So let me give you a few websites to check out that you guys can use, okay? Number one is realtor.com. Believe it or not, you can check inventory on any specific area on realtor.com. You can do that at Zillow.com. You can also find out the amount of investor transactions at listsource.com. Listsource.com, and just look up any area and find out the number of investor transactions, right? Another thing you can look up is BLS.gov, G-O-V, to find unemployment information. Now, this is not a huge one, and I don't want you to get caught up in paralysis of analysis. I mean, you will know if you're marketing in a depressed area. You'll know that beforehand. Like back in 2008 and 2009 in Detroit, Michigan, that was a depressed area, right? Everybody knew it. Everybody knew it. Okay. So you don't typically have to worry about that as much. You know, I don't have specific, I mean, some people have asked, you know, what's an appropriate amount of unemployment? You know, an acceptable amount of unemployment. I don't know. And I don't care. Right. I just know if it's a depressed area, I'm going to know about it. Right. So, but you can check out unemployment at BLS.gov. You can also find local rent information and information about MSAs. There's a tremendous amount of information at Zillow.com/local-info. Zillow.com/local, LOCAL-info. Okay.
Yes.
And remember, lower rents mean lower price properties are available. If all the rents you see are $1,500, $2,000 a month, or even $1,000 a month, you know, you probably want to pick a different area because you want to find some that are, even if it's only $500, $600, $700, that'll make a big difference. A big difference, right?
Right.
You can also find the percentage of renters in any given area at census.gov, C-E-N-S-U-S.gov, right? And remember, the more renters there are, the more lower priced homes there will be. Right. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm putting all of these links. You probably, if you're watching this video, you'll see these links will be below the video in the course.
Awesome. Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of other things you can do, But the main thing is population. How old is the city or town or that big MSA, a million plus population? Check the amount of inventory. You want a decent amount of inventory and house prices below the median, because I'm always buying below the median. Even in Charlotte, it's probably 150 to 200,000, 175 to 215 or something MSA or median price home. You know, I very rarely sell a house for that kind of price, right?
Yeah. And so the other thing too is, I know Larry, you already said it, but don't overanalyze this. Don't spend more than maybe an hour or two doing this, because you could really dive deep into the details and be paralyzed with all of this analytical data. But you just kind of want to know where you're going. And those sites that we gave you and the links below will give you a ton of information, way more than you even need.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But the first thing is, where do you have friends or relatives that you might want to go visit sometime? So you got some boots on the ground that can help you. And also, it's a business trip every time you go to see them, right? Because you're going to go check on some properties, ride by, make some offers on properties, visit a seller, visit a buyer. And now it's a business trip instead of a vacation.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Like, I live in St. Louis, and right in my backyard, in those counties around me, similar to Charlotte, is probably where I would go, right? But if I wanted to, Florida's down southeast. Yeah, stay out of. But if I'm going to Florida southeast to go on vacation, why don't I pick a town in between St. Louis and Florida, so I can go there on my anyway.
Exactly. Well, you can go through Alabama to get to Florida.
I could.
Just stay away from South Carolina. All right. So, Larry, let me ask you one more question, Larry. Are you just targeting the counties outside of your MSA? Are you going any further or deeper than that?
You can if you want to. It's entirely up to you. I can't handle all the leads that I have right now. I'm looking for another acquisition person. I just can't handle them. But you could go 2, 3, 4, 5 counties out if you wanted to. But by then, you're going to hit a different MSA, right? You're going to hit a different MSA. So I do go 2 or 3 counties deep out. I try to stay away from the ones right next to Charlotte, right next to Mecklenburg County. And I try to go out a couple of counties, right?
Okay.
And I tend to find that my best deals come 2 or 3 counties out. So guys, take a little bit of time, analyze the markets, use the websites, use the links that Joe's going to put in, and make sure you do a little bit of analysis on the market, but don't get caught up in paralysis of analysis. Just pick a market and move on, and then start your marketing and advertising. And on the next module, we're going to talk about building your team, finding boots on the ground, finding an investor-friendly attorney or title company, depending on your state, and the people that you need. We're going to give you lots of links and ways to find those as well, regardless of where you live or where you want to market your business.
Very good. I'm looking forward to it, Larry.
Awesome.